Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in the great Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. Teresa, what's going on? How are we doing?
Doing pretty good. I have to admit, you wouldn't think that a two-hour time difference would be that much, but I think I am trying to get my body clock reset.
I was going to say, like, you've been all over the place as of late. What was it like to be out there in L.A. for the Super Bowl at SoFi Stadium, and what did you think of the game?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I have to admit, SoFi Stadium is a really, really nice place to watch a game, although I have to admit, sitting in the press box as high as it was, I kind of watched the game mostly on that wonderful video thing that they've got called Oculus out there. So I think it's called Oculus, according to my colleague. But it's a beautiful stadium. And the game, might not measure up to, you know, to some of the best over the years, but, you know, it came down to the final, you know, minute. So, and by that standard, you know, hey, and living up to the previous games, you know, the AFC, NFC championship games, the divisional round, you know, it was decided by 3 points. So, you know, at least it came down to, you know, toward the end, which I'm old enough to remember when there were lots and lots of routes in the Super Bowl. So, by that standard, it was a great game.
I was just going to say, if you're our age, you do not complain about games like this in the Super Bowl at all. I remember, like, the Titans-Rams Super Bowl was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I know that there had been a close one here and there, but, like, that was like, oh, finally, you know, a good game. And also, Teresa, out there, I know, so you're on the red carpet, so you little time with Mike Vrabel. Vrabel, make sure you have the first question. So how was he? Was he like Cali Vrabel, like Mr. Chill out there? How did that go?
Oh, come on, Joe. You think that Mike Vrabel just happening to go to California is going to change him? No. It was a typical, stereotypical maybe Mike Vrabel, but yeah, it was funny because, you know, I was positioned on the red carpet near Telemundo Deportes, which, you know, is a partner of NBC and, you know, helped show this game to other parts of the country and the world. And, you know, he went to their microphone because, you know, sorry, had a bit of a travails getting to the red carpet. Guys, I walked 7.4 miles on Thursday. About Good five Christ. Of them were around SoFi trying to find the spot to pick up media credentials. Yes, that was a bit of that was an issue, and it wasn't just for me. Lots of media had problems finding the actual credential pickup, which ironically turned out to be in the same place where we came through security. Yeah, I'll tell you that story later, but no, it was fun and did get him to stop and, you know, cause he kind of came through late and it's like, yeah, not letting him off the hook just because he, you know, tried to sneak in right at the bell and get into the show. So, you know, and he did stop and got a couple questions in. So, you know, asked him about the contract and, you know, and he made it clear that he had tried to make it clear it wasn't going to be a problem. But as I reminded him, a deal is never a deal until the paperwork is done. So, and then right. He ends up winning Coach of the Year. So he deflected the attention on the entire team and the coaching staff, et cetera. But, you know, I mean, it's his name on the trophy, and he's the head coach, and it's his coaching staff. So, you know, a well-deserved honor for a team and a coach that had to go through getting 91 different players ready to play. So, it was an interesting night, I'll say.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Teresa, now that the Bengals have lost in the Super Bowl, I think it's pretty obvious, at least it should be, that they're going to try to address the offensive line this offseason. That was a huge problem all season long for them. When it comes to the Titans and their path to try to get back to the playoffs and ultimately break through and get to the Super Bowl, obviously Ryan Tannehill is going to have to play better. We know that. But as you look at the rest of the AFC, with Burrow being what he is now, with Josh Allen and Mahomes and all these different quarterbacks, Justin Herbert coming up as well, How difficult is this path now for the Titans, even maybe more so next year as they move into year three of Burrow, year three of Herbert? Does it feel to you like the Titans may have just missed their window to truly compete for a Super Bowl?
No, and I'll say this. Yes, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, amazing. Justin Herbert as well. But, you know, there's a thing about you have to have that team put completely together. And when I heard the Bengals post-game on Sunday saying, we'll be back, we'll be back, I heard that 2 years ago. You know, Titans were all like, we'll be back, we'll be back. We've got Eddie George, we've got Steve McNair, we, you know, Kevin Dyson, we just came up a yard short. Guys, getting back to a Super Bowl is tough. And you have to have the pieces in place. And guess what? Bengals have got some players who are going to, you know, be hitting free agency as well. You know, these teams do not exist in the same way. And the Bengals won a lot of games closely. Shoot, that reminds me of the 99 Titans. You know, that was a team that went 13-3 and had a lot of games come down, you know, to the final minute as well. And, you know, sometimes you get really lucky. You have that run. Titans did have the best record in 2000. But guess what? They lost in the divisional round. It is not that easy to string together and put together and become, you know, that kind of, you know, dynasty, so to speak, in the NFL. You know, every year, another coaching cliche is, you know, we're going to, you know, every team is different. Well, it will be different for the Chargers, for the Bengals, for the Bills and the Chiefs as well. So, you know, I know that the odds have got the Chiefs as the favorite to be in the next Super Bowl, but, you know, that's a team that couldn't score at the end of regulation on their own field in, what, their third, fourth straight AFC Championship game in Kansas City. It's not that easy. So for the Titans, yeah, their window's still available. Now, and wide open. Why? Well, that defense was pretty good. You know, they got to figure out what they're doing with Harold Landry. But a year ago, guys, we had so many questions about that defense. They kind of fixed them and showed that they could fix them. So, you know, right now the Titans have to show that they can, you know, fix some of the issues where on offense, you know, protecting their quarterback, giving him a little bit more time to throw. I mean, shoot, the Bengals know how important that is. If they'd given Joe Burrow a half second more on that 2nd-and-1, maybe he finds Ja'Marr Chase streaking down the sideline with Ramsey on the ground, and they win that game. So, you know, protect quarterback Ryan Tannehill has to get better. But you know what? You know, this is where Mike Vrabel said they've got to be great around Ryan Tannehill. Well, they never addressed the number one tight end last year. They tried to give Firkser a chance to earn the job, and that didn't work. And they need more depth at receivers so that, you know, if injuries do hit, you know, they're not having to pull up a guy off the practice squad to start a key game in late November as they did at New England with Cody Hollister.
If you had to make a choice, and this isn't necessarily the choice. I mean, I'm not a capologist, but if you had to make a choice, one thing I look at is I look at the offensive line, I look at Zach Cunningham, who's terrific, but he's also an inside linebacker. If you had to make a choice between Zach Cunningham and Taylor Lewan, what would your choice be?
At this point, I'd probably choose Taylor Lewan, but at that said, Joe, I'm trying to get them both to redo their contracts and rework them to create some more space around the roster, you know, because guess what? They need some more space. The cap space has to be created for this team to do much of anything this offseason. And so I'm going to a few guys. And you know, Kevin Byard already made clear that if it would help keep Harold Landry here, he'd be happy to rework his contract. So, you know, that's the thing. After watching what the Rams did, now, granted, they traded away a ton of first-round draft picks. Think about this. The last time they used a first-round draft pick in L.A., 2016 on Jared Goff. The next time they have a first-round pick, 2024. So, you know, that shows that you can massage, work around, do some financial wizardry around the salary cap. So, you know, get busy, do some things. We all know the dead cap number that Ryan Tannehill has, but after – you know, the salary cap's going to be going up this year. It's probably going to be going up in the next few years. Why? The new TV deals are going to be really kicking in. And, you know, we're still in the part where that cap's going up. They're sharing some of the pain and making up for what happened over the past 2 years of the pandemic. So, you know, just get through this year, find a way to make some things work, you know, kick that salary cap can down the road a little bit. But, yeah, that window's open, and I'm going to circle back around. Why? Jeffrey Simmons. A.J. Brown. Those are two guys who are going into their fourth season. There's still a lot of young talent on this roster, and you keep trying to maximize as much as you can around those pieces.
Teresa, last thing for you. What did you think of Tennessee's win last night against Kentucky, and what do you think that could do for the Vols as they move forward here?
Well, I already saw them bumped up to like a number three seed by Joe Lenardi. So that shows that, guys, this is a team that beat Arizona back during the non-conference play. And it feels like they've kind of found how they need to win. They've grown up. You don't come into a season fully formed. I don't care who you are and what the sport is. And they seem to have figured out what they need to do to win, how to play, how to do what they need to do. And that was a pretty dominant performance. Now, granted, home court advantage, everyone was primed in that building last night, but they went out and thumped a team that is in the top five and a team that they're probably going to see again in March. And if they can do that, but trust me, guys, I already had Vols fans telling me, we know what Tennessee does in March. Well, that's another thing they'll have to fight against. But this is a team that can beat anyone on any given night when they play like that.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Teresa, really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
Absolutely. Teresa right, Walker, Teresa. The GOAT here on the program. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Teresa had to say there. Shield Capati has also come out with a very interesting list of bold NFL offseason predictions that I think you're going to want to take a look at. We'll get to that coming up on the other side as well. This is Robbie and Rexro here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is Nashville's official home of NASCAR. Tune in on Sunday, February the 20th at 1:30 for the Daytona 500 at Daytona International Speedway. Also get set for the race with Chasing Checkers every Sunday at 8 a.m. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. It is Blink 182 Day here on Robbie and Rex Road. Michelle Knezvik is upset with GB Joe, and this is her response. And I'm here for it. This is good stuff.
What's GB Joe?
Joe Rexroad.
Instead of GBO, GB Joe. That's when people accuse me of being a UT homer, it's GB Joe. Now, tonight, if Vanderbilt goes and wins at number one or number two? Auburn.
Gonzaga's
then
one.
I can be back to Vandy Joe.
Vandy Joe. You're just kind of alternating back Joe and again. Forth.
Yes, exactly.
Homer Joe.
That's right.
Meanwhile, your guy on Twitter, I mean, I'll give you credit for acknowledging that you should not have retweeted his stupid tweet. But now he's asking, like, well, what's wrong with it? He already had people in his mentions telling him what the call. So he's just acting dumb now. I can't believe that I even have to look or talk to this guy.
Did you start following him?
No.
Kind of sounds like you did.
I didn't even realize he tweeted back.
Yeah. Will you tell him to shut up, please?
Listen, it's actually really funny because I tweeted and said, this is for you, Joe. I'm going to be unbiased right now and say, although he was out, blah, 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 that wasn't the call where he screenshotted. And now Joe is getting in Twitter fights with him. He's going back and forth.
After it.
Who is it? Let me look at it. Okay. So it's Owen at 75 to Rupp. He sells homes, makes graphics, and drinks a little bourbon.
There you go.
And
sounds like your type of dude.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fine. It's not like he has like a bunch of like outrageous crap in his timeline. It's mostly a bunch of whining about how his team got smoked, and he's got to look at one out of bounds call in the middle of a 20-point deficit, and then you retweeted it. I had to digest this today. Like, this is some important thing. Maybe I'm just mad at you for the Blink 182. I'm sorry.
I just got to tell you, this is one of my favorite days in show history. Been awesome.
I love that.
Great
one.
Show so far.
I think Joe's just mad Kentucky lost. That's definitely it.
Wow. That shifted very quickly.
They are in my heart, deep in my heart. I did like Kentucky when Tubby Smith was the coach.
We know you Joe's and Cal are BFFs.
Joe's got a shoulder tattoo of Cal on his shoulder. It's good stuff.
In all seriousness, I actually really do like Cal.
Do you really?
I do, and I think I do. I really do. Yes.
So do I.
That surprised me.
And I think he's a better coach than people give him credit for, and I think he's especially effective in the NIT.
Yes.
See, I was going to say I'm going to clip that and save that until that last sentence, but I might just clip that first part and replay it on replay for every bump for you.
Bust out the big guns in the NIT.
Keith texting in says, Vandy Joe Rexador. Vandy Joe Rexador from Keith on the text line. That's good stuff.
There you go. Rexador instead of Rex Road. I like it.
That's right. So your colleague at The Athletic, Sheil Kapadia, has come out with 10 bold predictions for this offseason in the NFL. And I'm not going to go through all of them. We've tweeted out the link to the article at 1025 The Game on Twitter. But there are a few in here that I think are particularly interesting, and most of them revolve around the quarterback position. Starting with this one, he has the Indianapolis Colts trading Carson Wentz to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Carson Wentz being traded from the Colts to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And later in this bold prediction saga, he has Derek Carr being traded from the Raiders to the Colts. So swapping out Carson Wentz going to the Bucs, Derek Carr going to the Indianapolis Colts. What do you think of that? The option of maybe Derek Carr getting traded to the Colts that Sheil Kapadia, a friend of the show, has put out there.
That is not one that I considered. But that's very interesting. And I honestly, if the Colts, with all the smoke clears, if they're sitting there with Derek Carr as their quarterback, boy, I like Derek Carr. I mean, I think, you know, he's not perfect, but I think that's an upgrade. I think it's definitely an upgrade. That might put them over the top. By the way, he also has, you know, these are bold predictions, and he's got some really interesting one, including a Mariota one that I just love. But he's got the two big guys that we've been talking about ad nauseum for the last month going back to their teams, just so people don't get too excited.
Now, there's lots of quarterback movement in these bold predictions. Jimmy G has a landing spot. Matt Ryan has a new landing spot in these bold predictions. Kirk Cousins, a new landing spot. The Kirk Cousins thing is interesting. Like, if Kirk Cousins is on the move this offseason, what's Minnesota going to do at quarterback? Like, what's their backup plan at quarterback? I don't know.
Does he address it? Yeah. Oh, how about getting Teddy Bridgewater back? There we go.
Yeah, man. Come on.
But I tell you what, I would like to know if Michelle will head to another one of your teams that's kind of down on its luck lately.
Yes, I know where you're going with this. The Steelers with Marcus Mariota. Listen, I think it's okay.
Excited?
No, I wouldn't use excited. I would use fine. But as long as they're going to draft somebody who's somewhat promising, but it really scares me because this draft, there's just really not a lot of QB options. But I'm thinking Kenny Pickett, stay in Pittsburgh. If they could get him, that'd be great. Marcus Mariota, that worries me a bit, quite a bit, actually.
Do we think that Marcus can be a starter in this league? Like, is somebody going to make Marcus Mariota their starting quarterback?
Well, I think that's probably best case, which is, okay, you're the caretaker starter, right? Like, that's probably where it could happen for him is we got a young guy. We don't necessarily want to throw the young guy in for now, you know. And look, if you're Marcus Mariota, you have to understand you may be the starter for 2-3 games,
yeah.
But I think something like that could happen if the right thing worked out, where it's like a team that wants to draft quarterback, wants to start over in the meantime, might be a pretty good team still. And feels like, okay, Mariota could, for however long it is, probably not the whole season, maybe one season, but probably not. But he could, you know, he could get some W's out there. I love that particular scenario. I mean, I'd love to see that for him.
You think Mike Tomlin can make the playoffs with Marcus Mariota as his starting quarterback? I mean, this version of Ben Roethlisberger that he just made the playoffs with was pretty impressive. You think Marcus could go in there and make the playoffs?
I think he could. You know, again, if depending on how everything else shakes out for them, they badly, just like the Bengals, just like their rivals in the division, they badly need to upgrade their offensive line. But it's so different. I mean, Mariota has his flaws, but now you're talking about, to me, someone who can push the ball down the field better than Roethlisberger at this point. Also, someone who can move. Now, you got a quarterback, and they've struggled so much to run the ball. I feel like, why not tap into that run threat to the max with him anymore, right? I mean, like when he was here, oh, he's a franchise QB and he hurt a lot. You gotta limit that. Please slide, Marcus. Please slide. Like if you're a team now, I mean, the Raiders just used him as a trick player. Like if he ever had an opportunity now, I would totally let that rip and be like, let's lean in on. I mean, like Lamar Jackson like stuff. Seriously, like use his running ability. It's extremely good all the way until. Because it's going to be a short-term thing anyway.
Sheil also has the Washington Commanders making a big move as well with Jimmy G. That'd be some good stuff. Nothing fires me up like Washington Commanders quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, man. Inspiring stuff. The Commanders would be must-watch TV.
They would. Doing 102.5 The Game Friday night for the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beer Cage. You can have drink specials, enter win Preds tickets, and watch the Preds take on the Carolina Hurricanes. It's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beer Cage, located at 114 2nd Avenue South downtown. The puck drops at 6 p.m. this Friday night. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. How does Ryan Tannehill go about taking better care of the football next year? What all goes into that? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by Preds captain Roman Josi coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that conversation right now. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, one of the things that continues to me anyway, just to be so mystifying about not only the Titans, but really Ryan Tannehill specifically in his performance this past season, was the amount of interceptions that he threw. You're talking about a guy that when he took over as quarterback for the Titans in 2019, he threw 6 interceptions that year. He threw 7 in 16 games in 2020. And this past season, he throws 14. So you're talking about 13 interceptions combined in his first 2 years as starting quarterback for the Titans. He throws 14 interceptions in the regular season this past year. Obviously, as we know, throws 3 picks in the playoff game as well. So you're talking about 17 total interceptions that Ryan Tannehill threw this past season. If you ask him, and I get this, each interception has a story of its own, a life of its own. We heard that line get tossed out there a few times. But some of them were just either not seeing guys or forcing passes that you have no business forcing. And my question is, like, how did Ryan Tannehill get to the point where you're throwing a combined 13 picks in 2 years, and now all of a sudden you threw 14 in the regular season this past season and 3 in a playoff game? Like, how did the turnover numbers change so dramatically in your mind? And how did the Titans fix that and try to get Tannehill back to the 2019-2020 version in terms of taking care of the football? Because I think all of us believe you don't even have to do anything spectacular. If he just takes care of the football, they win that game against Cincinnati.
It's a great question. And for some people, if you answer it with anything other than, well, he just sucks now, then you're making excuses for him. But I think you do have to look, you got to embrace the reality of the only way the Titans are going to do anything big next year is if they are great around Tannehill or better around Tannehill. And the one thing we talked about all year, which I don't think there's any question it's a factor, is pass rush. To me, again, I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just trying to look at the other factors other than, what are you looking at? Why did you throw that? What are you doing? Some of them, yeah, a couple of them for sure. Like the Dez Fitzpatrick stuff in that one game, you know, the 4-pick game. I'd say one or two, you can probably easily say you were in a tough spot. You had a receiver out there running routes. You did not anticipate getting any reps on offense in that game, and it cost you. But I think protection probably sped up the clock in his head early in the season. It looked that way to me. Now again, you can still sail the ball out of bounds, throw it at someone's feet, eat the ball, take another sack. You can do something besides throwing a pick. I also So that, but protection is one. And then to me, it's also, I think OC and just analyzing, okay, was it just that Ryan Tannehill with Arthur Smith was just, he was just better? Is it because he had Jonnu Smith, protection better? Is there, are there things that Arthur Smith did with him that, you know, that got the best out of him that they didn't do last year? I mean, I think that's got to be analyzed. Mike Vrabel is going to, I mean, I asked that question essentially, and Vrabel immediately shot it down. And that's fine. But inside the building, I think that's got to be something that you really look at closely. Like, what kinds of conditions, other than the things that are personnel related, like, you know, giving him a good pocket and things like that. But what about scheme, formation, and things like that that were working, that changed last year that maybe had an adverse effect on him? Again, it's not I'm not trying to excuse Tannehill, but I'm just saying, you, I think as the Titans, I think you have to look at those things around him really closely.
Well, and I agree. And the thing that is so weird about this is, and makes me kind of go back to the coordinator discussion in terms of, all right, what was Arthur Smith doing that allowed Ryan Tannehill to be not only successful, but just turnovers weren't a problem with Ryan Tannehill. And the one thing that last year was just so mystifying was, you know, Tannehill would drop back and it just kind of felt like he didn't see guys. Like, he didn't see some of the defenders that he was, like, he threw 14 picks. He could have thrown more this past season. I mean, there were a couple of times where he threw the ball that should have been intercepted. I think of the Pittsburgh game. There was some of the Houston game that he in the first one where he threw four. He could have thrown more in that game. So it's just not seeing guys sometimes that I just don't recall being that big of a problem. And you would think, you know, at 33 years old, you know, the mental part of the game, Tannehill's taken a ton of snaps. He's seen pretty much every look a defense can throw your way at this point. So reading defenses and reading coverages, yeah, you're going to get fooled, and the teams are going to do a good job of disguising things every now and then. But I don't really remember in 2019 or 2020 it being a huge problem of Tannehill just not seeing guys and forcing balls into traffic. And it almost looked at times he was throwing it right to the defense. Like, that was a repeated and consistent problem with Ryan Tannehill this year. And I just don't know how they got to that point where he's just not seeing guys.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while he'd have a head scratcher. The loss at Cincinnati last year, early in the game, he threw one, like, what are you looking at? That's going to happen. It happens to everybody, but yeah. I agree. It didn't seem to happen much at all. And it seemed to happen a lot more last year. Again, like, go back to the first pick. Like, you telegraphed it. You made it very easy, okay, on the Bengals to intercept that ball. But I'm also looking at the play, and I'm like, why would the safety not go right there? There's nothing else on that play to draw him anywhere else. I mean, it's just a weird play. It's a weird play. Now, you know, maybe still Tannehill can still try to draw someone with his eyes, can still throw it faster, can still not throw it. I mean, a lot of things he could have done better, but there's an example of, like, a weird play. The second pick in the playoff game, talked about that ad nauseum, but I mean, that's a play that the Bengals had completely pegged. And obviously it hurts more, a play like that, when it's first and goal after it's been nothing but running to get to first and goal. And then you basically give them a layup there. That's, I'd say that one is more on Downing than it is on Tannehill, but still the QB. So throw it. And to your point, he definitely had some, and the win over Indy, the first one, he had one where I just didn't see a defender, and, you know, he didn't pay for it. It wasn't caught, but I don't know. It's very strange, like you said, because the mental aspect, and he was so sharp in those first years too. Like, it just, he seemed to be a step ahead of the defense all the time. And he did not seem to be that last year. How much of that is just regression by him? How much of that is the offense not meshing with him the way it used to?
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Shane from Ashland City texting in says, you know, they said they've never seen a quarterback that could stare a blitz in the eye and throw the ball as good as him. I've never seen that on him. In fact, I never saw him check his progressions this year at all. He was one receiver tunnel vision. This coming from Shane from Ashland City on the text line. I don't know that I buy that he doesn't go through his progressions, but go. I mean, the comment that J-Rob made of staring down the blitz and nobody throwing the ball like he does is, we talked about it at the time. I don't really know what J-Rob's talking about there.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers against the blitz are very good. And I do think that one difference between Tannehill, and we've talked about Mariota some on this show, he has not, to me, gotten to the point where he so badly wants to avoid being hit that he's just, you know, he's got happy feet and he's seeing ghosts and he's just getting rid of the ball. I mean, he takes hits. I think the toughness is totally fair. So he stands in against the blitz and he throws it. I mean, I think that's true.
Sure.
But there's so much more to it, you know. And again, when you throw it to the other team to this extent, then you're doing something wrong. I think the going through the progressions thing is, you know, like, again, last year, especially before Luan got hurt, he really had time to pat the ball and go, okay, no, okay, no, that, okay, we'll go here. We talked about it all the time. I mean, it was, so that was a big part of this. He knew he had that time. And so he was very composed in the pocket. And I think the very first game this year, it was like, ooh, this is different. Now you still hope, okay, Luan off an ACL, he's going to get better, but it was immediately very different.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on Ryan Tannehill. Got a lot to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, there are deals from everything from $50 off to the Woodhouse Spa, half off dining at the Mainstay and Hard Rock Cafe, half off to Brooklyn Bowl, plus $50 free with a purchase of $100 in downtown dollars. Check out all of these deals now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Going to be joined by Preds captain Roman Josi coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that conversation with him. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Liam texting in says, there were injuries and suspect blocking at times, but the biggest thing was dysfunction between Downing and Tannehill. We've seen Tannehill be good. Downing wasn't good in Oakland, so hopefully the new passing coordinator can fix the issues. This coming from Liam on the text line. It is interesting to kind of think about where Tim Kelly is going to fit into this picture as they move forward here.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have a significant role. Now, is he – if it's what Schwartz was said to be by multiple people to me inside the building, which is and again, we saw it in the practice field, basically another set of eyes, a very experienced and accomplished set of eyes who, you know, can look at things and kind of take a different perspective and say, what about this and that, throw things out, serve as an advisor. I mean, that's and turned out to be, you know, the Titans found value in that. Passing game coordinator, is that all Kelly's going to do? He's going to just sit back and, you know, kind of give his two cents, or is he actively going to be scheming? I mean, it's an interesting thing. There are teams that have, like, I mean, there's teams that have run game coordinator and an OC, pass game coordinator and an OC. There's different ways to do it. It'll be interesting to see how they do it, and then what impact Kelly can make. Obviously, Vrabel knows him well and trusts him. You know, you can look at. I mean, to me, it's like when he had Watson, he had really good. You know, it's like great numbers when he had Watson, and then not when he didn't. All due respect to your buddy, Davis yeah. Mills. So, I feel like, you know, he's been a productive coach in this league. How much impact will he make? Maybe it'll be a significant add.
Well, it's just so crucial to cut down on the turnovers, because look, anybody saying that Ryan Tannehill is going to elevate the team and like he's going to be the guy that, you know, carries them to a Super Bowl, I just think you're living in fantasy land at this point. So I don't know that anybody reasonably expects that as they look at Ryan Tannehill right now. But again, it's the turnovers. Like, if he doesn't turn the ball over against Cincinnati, they win the game. Ultimately, is that good enough to win a Super Bowl? Like, is Ryan Tannehill going to need to do more than just not turn the ball over? to win the Super Bowl for the Titans? Maybe. I don't know. Like, maybe so. But, like, if Ryan Tannehill doesn't have huge turnover problems this year, could the Titans have won the Super Bowl? I think there's a chance with that defense, with some of the other weapons they have, maybe with Derrick Henry getting back closer to full strength as the playoffs went on. I don't know. Like, we'll never know the answer to that. But that's the number one problem to me with Tannehill right now is, like, you cannot give the ball to the other team. And if you can avoid doing that with any sort of regularity, like if you told me right now, Tannehill next year throws 8 interceptions on the year, I'm probably taking that. The Titans are going to have a heck of a year next year. Like, they've got to find a way to cut down on the turnovers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, in all likelihood, he would have had to do more than just that for them to actually win it. Like you said, we'll never know. I mean, I honestly don't remember off the top of my head. In the previous two playoff losses in which he didn't play especially well, did he throw picks? He definitely threw one
against Baltimore.
One pick late for sure against Baltimore. And I don't remember against Kansas City. I don't think he did, right?
No.
I mean, it's like, this is at least start here, you know, at least get to this and then see what you can do. If you're not turning it over and you have a better tight end and you have a young receiver who's given the defense something else to think about and you protect him well, and Derrick Henry is the same Derrick Henry. Hey, piece of cake.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Indy Ben texting in says, things are likely to get worse rather than better for Tannehill in 2022, especially when you factor in the limited cap space for the Titans. Henry will be another year older. Juan Saffold or LaJuan will likely be gone. And unless you get a complete 180 season from Julio, A.J. Brown is your only threat in the passing game. Arthur Smith masks so many deficiencies for Tannehill. This coming from our friend Indy Ben on the text line.
This sounds like wishful thinking, Indy Ben. Although he may not be wrong, but it sounds like wishful thinking. See, yeah, and that's – so the last thing – well, look, it's easier to agree with that now, given how Tannehill played this year. I still know that I saw with my own two eyes Tannehill actively, you know, making plays on a football field, making reads on a football field, and doing a lot of really good things on a football field. Clearly, Arthur Smith deserves a good chunk of that credit, but – I don't know that it was quite as extreme as, like, he took this broken bad QB and somehow, you know, smoke and mirrors his way to those two seasons. I mean, Tannehill was very good. Why was he not last year? That's the big question. But there will be another chance. And another thing, Indy Ben, is it's just like with your team. When I can look at the Colts right now and say, yeah, just what do they have downfield? Well, I expect, as I'm sure you do, that they're going to address that, correct? And I expect the Titans to address those two spots too, tight end and receiver.
Chad from Chattanooga texting in says, we seem to have forgotten that our starting skill players spend almost no time together in training camp as a group with Tannehill, Brown, Jones, and Henry. And considering all the injuries that the team continued all season, there was never a real opportunity to bring it all together with a new offensive coordinator. This comes from Chad in Chattanooga.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it for sure. But, I mean, I think at the end there, they had a – first of all, I'm going to separate Henry and the receivers. I mean, the running game and the passing game, they go together, but that wasn't a thing. You know, the running game was what it was. And when he came back, you know, I mean, honestly, if they would have won, I think we would have seen some good stuff from Derrick Henry in future games too. But the pass game, yeah, I mean, I think that that's fair. I also think that at the end there, Julio Jones actually got over the hamstring and actually put together some practices. And actually, I think we saw some of the results of that too. In the last two games he played, you would take a full season of that. It's not, I'm still not saying, it's not like $15 million in a second round pick level at all, but you would take Julio Jones against the Texans, Julio Jones against the Bengals. If you could sign up for that right now, if you're the Titans, you would do that. And then, again, can you supplement that, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry? We'll see. I mean, I see a lot of, Derrick Henry, he's on the down. You don't know that. I don't know that Derrick Henry's not running for 2,200 yards next year. I don't know that. And if anybody, he's still in the prime of his age in terms of being an athlete, and based on what we know about him, I think that it would be silly to just expect him to start regressing significantly next year. We'll see.
Andrew on Twitter says, Matt Ryan for Tannehill. Arthur back with Ryan Tannehill and Matt throwing to Julio in their old report. What do you think of that one?
There it is. We've talked about it.
And sure. Shiel Kapati has got Matt Ryan on the move. Says he ends up in Cleveland.
I didn't read that. What did he say is happening with Baker then?
I don't know. I didn't get to that part of it.
Baker going back?
Could be. Arthur Smith and Baker Mayfield, baby. Get it done.
Hey, I hope this offseason is that exciting and fun.
Yeah, give me some quarterback movement. Be some good stuff. I know Titans fans are probably like, well, if we're going to have Ryan Tannehill, let's have no quarterback movement so nobody ends up on the Colts. That'd be great.
I'm still, you know, the Mariota. See, you could do just like with the Steelers, you could do the same thing. Caretaker quarterback, you're going to draft one.
Yeah.
In the meantime, in comes Mariota.
That's right.
Taking direct aim at the Tennessee Titans.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Roman Josi, Predators captain. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators, the funk they're in right now, how they get out of it coming up down the stretch here, starting on Friday against Carolina. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.